You're listening to Find a Podcast About. Hey, thank you for hitting play on your podcast app. I'm your host, Timothy Kim O'Brien, and I bring my experience with podcasting since 2006 as a listener and a podcaster. I'm here to help you outsmart the algorithm and find your next binge-worthy podcast. Here's how the show works. I comb through millions of podcasts currently available for free on various platforms, and then I come back to you with what I've found. Sure, you can use search engines for recommendations from many podcast apps, but I feel that getting a personal recommendation from a real, live, breathing person is still the best way to find the gems that are out there. The show is broken up into three halves. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of car talk, so bear with me. The first half is the stats of the show being reviewed. Gives you all the details about where to find the show, how many episodes, who's hosting the show. Basically, that part is just for those that want the stats. The second half of the show, I dig deeper into the show and letting you know how well hosts interact, talk about their audio quality a bit, and then I'll let you know what I think the show is about. Now, the last half of the show is where I talk about why the show is binge-worthy, you know, where to start your journey with the show being reviewed, and I'll be reaching out to the host to see if they'd like to discuss their show and talk about their podcast journey. So, let's get going. I discovered writers drinking coffee at the beginning of the pandemic. Like many people, I was working out of my home, and I needed something to pass the time. Plus, I'm a writer, and I do love drinking coffee. So I saw the name of this podcast, and instantly, I was hooked. Now, you can find Writers Drinking Coffee at writersdrinkingcoffee.com. Links will be in the show notes. Or any of your podcast apps. Now, your hosts for this are Jeannie Warner, Chaz Brenchley, and John Smith. And they can be reached at Jeannie at writersdrinkingcoffee.com, Chaz at writersdrinkingcoffee.com, and you guessed it, John at writersdrinkingcoffee.com. Now, the genre of this podcast is in the arts category, and they do post weekly. Their first episode debuted June 11th, 2019, and they have published about 125 episodes at the time of this recording. Now, each episode clocks in at about 33 minutes, some more, some less, but the average is about 33 minutes. And I'm going to let Jeannie go ahead and describe to you what the show is all about.
This is a podcast based on writers sitting around drinking coffee and or occasional cocktails and wine and talking about anything and everything.
Now, they do have a Facebook page and a Twitter account. I'll have the links to reach out to them in the show notes. Now, each host has their own personal Instagram account, and the show does have a TeePublic account where you can buy items with their logo on it. And according to Listen Notes, they are in the top 10% of their niche. So they have amassed a great following. Now, I'll have the Listen Notes and Podchaser links in the show notes as well for more information on the show. Now, they do consider themselves PG-13 as they do have occasional adult language, and sometimes they cover topics like sex in their episodes. One of their episodes is about sex and romance in writing. So if that's a turnoff for you, then avoid those specific episodes. We'll talk about those later. But even in that episode, they treat the subject like adults and with care for their audience. So I wouldn't necessarily avoid those episodes, but you do need to know about them ahead of time. Are you happy with your podcast app? I know, hard question to answer, but let me ask you this. Does your app allow you to rate the podcast that you're listening to? Great if it does, but does it allow you to rate every episode you listen to? Does it allow you to join a community of other listeners and share and comment on your favorite podcasts? If you're a podcaster, does the app that your listeners are using give you a tip jar where they can support your show directly instead of paying fees to somebody else? Well, GoodPods allows you as a listener and as a podcaster to rate and review all the episodes of a podcast, as well as joining a community of other podcast enthusiasts to discuss that thing that we all love, podcasts. Give it a shot. You may not want to go back to your old app, and you might find a community that is engaged and excited about the same things you are. Grab it on Google Play or the Apple Store today. Now, let's dive into this podcast. One of the things that I really enjoy is how in every episode, usually Jeannie introduces the show, and you as a listener know what to expect. The beginning is usually the same, but for new listeners, just discovering this podcast does give a warm feeling. And to those who have binged on the podcast, it feels like old friends getting together to talk about writing. Let's hear what that sounds like.
There will be rants. There will be raves. There will be occasional reading. There will be conflicting creative advice driven by at least three utterly disparate points of view. Your hosts through this adventure are Chaz Brinchley, John Schmidt, and me, Jeannie Warner.
Now, since this intro is usually the same and may be scripted, each time Jeannie reads it, I never feel that it's a script. You know, when a podcast welcomes you the same way each time, then it feels familiar and welcoming. You know what you're getting into. And the hosts become more like friends than podcast hosts. Now, with the welcome taken care of, since there are three hosts, they interact with each other really nicely. You can tell that they're good friends, and you get the feeling that you're listening to a conversation between people you'd really like to know in your personal life. Rarely are there times when they speak over each other, but when it does happen, it's just like a regular conversation between folks who know where they're going in that conversation. Usually, Jeannie is leading the conversation, and Chaz and John produce great follow-up questions or relaying, you know, their thoughts on what the guest is talking about, which is usually writing. In writing circles, egos can take over sometimes. In my experience with most writing groups I've attended, this has definitely been the case. But in this podcast, each host gets enough mic time to contribute to the episode. Now, I'd like to put on my podcaster's ear for you for just a moment. Before episode about 39 or 40, the hosts would be in a coffee shop, and the quality was a little hurt by that since there were customers mulling about and, you know, on occasion interrupting. Now, to me, it sounded like they had one microphone in the middle of a table and they were all using it. That being said, for me, it added to the nuance of the podcast in that it felt like a very positive writer's workshop. When I listen to the early episodes, I really want to get into that conversation with them and, you know, drink some coffee, which I usually do. Now, after the pandemic took hold, they had to go remote just like everybody else. And for me, they didn't really miss a beat. They pivoted very well, and the sound quality actually got a little bit better for the most part. Of course, you know, there were some guests that didn't have the best setup to do an interview. However, I could hear what the guests had to say, and the hosts, for the most part, were crystal clear. Now, I think most listeners would not even notice, but if they do, the content was more compelling than the actual audio quality. Another strength to this podcast is that they are laser focused on the topic at hand, which is usually interviews with other writers. Now, each interview, they focus on what the guest is saying, and every episode I've listened to, the hosts are very well prepared. Jeannie, or if John or Chaz is leading, introduces the guest so that we, the listener, are familiar with the guest and know what to expect. They take the time to get to know their guests and they get out of the way to let the guests tell their stories. Now, I'm going to play something from episode 122, where they were talking about 9/11 in verse.
You had been a writer and a poet long before this. How did the stress affect your creativity and your ability to put all of these thoughts and emotions and memoir into words? What did stress do?
It shut me down initially for a long time. I didn't write at all for about 6 months. A lot of other writers and other kinds of artists very quickly went into a creative spell, and so a lot of early work came out in response to this.
In that exchange from episode 122, Remembering 9/11 in Verse, you just heard the guest talking about her experience with the tragedy of 9/11 and how it affected her writing. It's episodes like this one that I keep coming back to and will listen to repeatedly, probably on 9/11 or after something happens in my life that impacts me as it did this guest. Now, I'd like to stay with the hosts for just another minute here. The three main hosts are Jeannie, Jazz, and John, and they all have diverse backgrounds, but one thing that unites them is writing. Now, writing can be a very solitary art, but these three have been able to reach out and amass listeners and a following that, for me at least, it makes the practice of writing feel just a little bit less lonely. Now, each of the hosts brings with them a distinct perspective, as each host is in a different phase of their writing career. They all have published books, either electronically or in print, and it seems to me Chaz probably has the most experience or the most success. But it does feel like they each respect each other's viewpoints. They don't always agree. They're not yes men for each other's egos. But for the listener who is an aspiring writer or an accomplished writer, then this is the type of podcast that needs to be on your playlist. One last point I'd like to bring about this podcast in this half of the show is that the hosts are always having fun. Now, as they say in their opening, this podcast is a labor of love, and in each episode, you can hear that the hosts are enjoying making the show and, you know, having their guests on. Now, when I worked in customer service, a trick we used to do is put a mirror up in our cubicle and smile while we're talking to customers so that the customer could hear your smile. Now, I don't know if the hosts do this or not for the show, but I can hear their smiles each time I play an episode. And I can honestly say when I hear the guitar playing in the introduction for each episode, I can't help but start to smile. I know I'm in for a treat and for some enjoyable conversation about writing. This is not something that most people can fake over 130 episodes or 125 episodes. So I think they have something going that some podcasts just don't have. They're having a lot of fun doing what they're doing. If you've liked what you've heard so far, then I'd like to ask you to reach out. You can email me directly, timothy@findapodcastabout.xyz, or you can leave a voicemail at the website, findapodcastabout.xyz. I want to help you find your next binge-worthy podcast. And if you want me to find a podcast in any category that you're interested in, let me know. If you're a podcaster and feel that your podcast would be served by appearing on the show, I want to talk with you too. Use the same methods to reach out. I'm on Twitter @FindApodAbout, Instagram and Facebook @FindApodcastAbout. Another thing I'd like to ask is if you find value in this podcast, pass it along to a friend. Lastly, doing this podcast is a labor of love, but love ain't cheap, so consider donating to my Buy Me a Coffee Fund right on the website or go to buymeacoffee.com/findapodcastabout. Each episode usually takes about 5 to 7 hours of research, and then about 2 to 3 hours of production time. That's about 10 hours per episode. That is a lot of coffee. Like I said earlier, the best recommendations come from a real person. Let's outsmart the algorithm together. And while I'm on the topic about supporting the show, our first supporter ever, York Campbell from the Poetic Earthlings podcast, you can find him at poeticearthlings.com, has become our first sponsor for our show. So a big shout out to York Campbell. Check out his podcast. It might even be reviewed on this show. Thank you so much, York. So this is where I turn you from a listener to this show into a binger of writers drinking coffee. I really enjoy this podcast because it brings a feeling of community to me. As a writer, I enjoy the conversations they have in learning how other people do their writing and the stories they have about their journey. This podcast is definitely one for listeners who enjoy writing, are writers, or enjoy hearing about writers and their process. Now, if you're not in the business of writing, don't worry. Everything they talk about is easy enough to understand and enjoy. You can simply get into this podcast by listening to the writers tell their stories of success and failure and how they accomplished their art. One thing I would be remiss in not talking about is occasionally they do use adult language. And a few topics are adult-centered, specifically episode 30, where they discuss sex in writing and how to approach writing sex scenes, and episode 90, where they talk about romance and race relations. Now, that first episode, episode 30, is more risque than the second one. However, when they tackle topics like this, it's done without all the grade school snickers and giggling and all that stuff. You know, other podcasts can do that, but this one does not. They have fun with the topics and approach it very professionally. However, you should know, before going into any of these episodes, they do have some language. And let's hear what they have to say about that.
We may use explicit language and will almost certainly drop F-bombs, but this is not the point of this podcast or the drive of the content. So on a general scale of life, consider us a PG-13.
Now, a good question would be, where should you start your binge? Well, I'd say go with the very first episode and then look through the show titles to see what would interest you. Literally, you can start anywhere. But to get the full effect of the show, I'd say start with number one and move forward from there. And look out for the infamous episode 69. That's one of my favorite episodes. And after you listen to it, you'll know what I mean. Now, to sum all this up, if you're a writer, or you enjoy coffee, or if you enjoy hearing stories about writers, then don't sleep on this gem. Get binging on it right away. You're going to be entertained, enlightened, educated throughout all the episodes. Now, I do have one complaint about the podcast, and they don't tell the audience who's going to be on in future episodes. So you do need to have your app set for auto-download. This could be due to the availability of the individuals they talk with, or maybe it's just something that they've not been made aware of that would be a nice to have. Other than that, let me know what you think and which episode is your favorite. Maybe it'll be like mine, episode 69. So it's that time in the show where I bring on Jeannie, who is one of the hosts for Writers Drinking Coffee, and Deidre, the webmaster and podcast guru behind the show. Let's see what they have to say about their show.
We're so happy to be here.
Hey, I'm happy to have you here. We had fun before recording. We're going to have fun during recording. And then after the recording, we'll have a lot of fun. One of the things that I brought up in my review was how you all were able to pivot from doing your show live to doing it how we're doing everything now, which is doing it virtual. How was that pivot for you and for the rest of the team?
It had hiccups at first. It really did. There was an ocean of learning of the details of sound editing, for one, because for everybody who's been on a Zoom call, you get somebody might be saying a word like enema and then a little metallic noise. Soul, and so there's little holes in the words. So it taught me a new skill of going through and revitalizing old recording studio skills to see where you start seeing a recognition of the shape and how do you take that out and patch it all back together.
And honestly, the fact that this group of people in some subset or another has been meeting around that coffee table for 8, 10 years,
it's
a
true.
Long time, long before it became a podcast. So transitioning to a podcast was recording conversations that was already happening.
Right.
And transitioning to online was recording the same conversations, you know, over the phone.
It's a little challenging for our guests because many of our guests, while they have been writers in one way or another, not all of them have been technically apt writers. There's many of them have been older maybe or have not watched many podcasts or certainly have never plugged in and recorded anything. So there's always been a little bit of a learning curve. A few times we've had John go down and show somebody how to set thing up and be technical support.
I don't think any of our authors have owned microphones.
Oh, no, that is not true.
Oh, who?
Charlie Strauss had a very sexy microphone.
There we go. One. One.
I want to say three, but I can't remember names.
I have to figure out a way to get on your show because I have a sexy microphone. I have the RE320.
Tim, will you come be on our podcast?
I mean, you clearly write.
We love to have you on our podcast.
What are you doing next week? Because I am so there.
Fantastic.
So that's actually one of the interesting things you mentioned in the review was how we don't talk about what's upcoming and you didn't know, you know, what our turnaround was. Most of the time we record and then that's up like 2 days later. There's very little lead time in ours. So what are we doing next week? I'm not actually sure, but I think I'm going to get it probably tomorrow.
I try to keep three episodes in advance just from because of pandemic and because I want to say podcasting in the time of cholera, we have all had to learn to adjust. There's also the, I don't think I can adult very much next week, so we better get a couple episodes in the can and so that I can lay around and stare at the ceiling, stare at the ceiling and obsess over the weight of life's problems. And you got to have time for that, which means that you need to give yourself a few episodes so that you can produce something every Tuesday.
That's true. And with writing, it can get in the way of your podcasting because writing is your main passion. And I know I've had that issue, especially last month with National Novel Writing Month, that, you know, doing the writing really got in the way of the podcasting, but it worked out.
But you mentioned you had kids. Kids help you lose hair or turn gray, so.
Well, yeah, you know, the kids got in the way sometimes.
I mean, kids are kind of, pardon the expression, but the ultimate cock block to getting shit done. I mean, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write, except for somebody's had explosive diarrhea somewhere in between their bedroom and okay, I'm going to go do that now.
And sometimes that was me.
As it happens, you know, but they're not listening, so we're going to blame them. One of the episodes we have, we talked about writing blocks and a block in a scene or a block in a plot or where do I go from here? And the third one we invited was our friend Cliff Winnig, and he's got three kids now and twin girls and a little boy. And he says, how do I find time? How do I make time to do this thing when I'm a full-time daddy and a full-time teacher, as many people are with a whole schooling from home? So I believe that kids make everything harder. So hats off to you right now for having them and then dealing with it.
I do what I can. I do what I can. At least they're not throwing poop on the walls anymore. One of the things that you just said about having three episodes in the can, was that the way that you started your process? Because that's a really good practice to have for other podcasters out there.
There's a little bit more prep time than that, in that I like to read a little bit of something that everybody has done. Because then when I go and I talk to them in person, I like to be able to ask real questions, not just canned questions. Like, so, did you draw from your experience coaching hockey, Dee, when you were writing this story? Or was it based on when your parents got airlifted out of Tehran? I can feel the emotional content is the same. And by making it real for them, I like to think that it might ask questions that nobody else has asked them, especially for people who give a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of reading that goes involved in prep of just being ready to talk to people, because even the new authors or new writers, I'm like, can you send me a sample of your work? I'd be obliged for a PDF so that I can read your story and absorb your story and think about something intelligent to ask about it. And then ideally, when we're pimping it out to listeners, saying, hey, this is a new writer. If you have any interest in any of these things, this person is totally for you.
Exactly. And that's one of the great services that you do for the guests on your show. Just recently, you had a episode, and you're up to about 125, as of the recording of this interview, which is December the 2nd, but you had a poet on there, and I forget her name, but, I believe she was talking about, her experiences with 9/11, and you guys did such a great job promoting her that, it's on my podcast app, and I'm going to go ahead and buy her book because of your recommendation.
Well done. She was the 9/11 poet.
Yeah.
Right. It was interesting because it was her whole journey and the topic of, many people, especially in the past 2 years, have discovered that anxiety has prevented them from having the freedom of creativity. And especially after, for those of us that were around, September 11th, I was at work trying to figure out why I just lost connection to a whole bunch of machines that we happened to be monitoring networks of people that were in the tower. Deutsche Bank had machines in that tower that suddenly they were offline. And here's me frantically typing away, trying to figure out why can't I find these machines? And it took one of the guys in the sock with me reaching, grabbing my shoulder, tilting my head up to look at the screen up. Well, holy shit. Look at that. I suppose the I can't reach your machine is not top on Giuliani's list of things I'm going to tell him about today.
No.
Yeah.
No. And there are some writers who thrive on stress. The stress is what makes them, go wild. But I think more people found out in the last 2 years what long-term stress and how it differs from adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
Because you can't have an adrenaline rush for 2 years.
Well, it's like the joke that said, the minute I have time, I'm going to clean out the garage. And it turns out that's not the reason the garage is not clean. It's not time. But
exactly. Because the thing of it is that, life happens. One of the things I learned in my Air Force days as a mechanic was that, to ask, is somebody going to die because of this? And if not, then just keep on doing what you're doing.
Exactly. And it was interesting. There was a few, they were like Kate Elliott, Nalma Alexander, and a few others said, what inspires them to keep writing in these troubled times? And they were pretty blunt and they said mortgage.
I have to buy groceries.
Paying their mortgage. I'm fueled by creativity and I make a point to be creative at 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. every day. It's a different experience depending on whether you're making your livelihood that way versus you still have another alternative income source.
It's your passion project.
Yes.
I will say that is one of the things that I like about this, about our podcast, is the number of people who have in their head that once you get one book that sells well, woo-hoo, you're set for life.
Oh, God, no.
And the realization that a really, really successful author might make enough to buy their groceries off their monthly checks.
Yeah.
Unless it goes to television or, some other form of media. Straight up book writing, you got to keep writing and you got to keep on having bestsellers and then you survive.
Yeah.
The TV show Castle where everything he did was written books and he was a millionaire with his own giant apartment in New York. I was like, oh no, something has been syndicated there.
I presume they were all using, much like Knives Out in the movie, that they were all using the fictional life of Rex Stout, the man who wrote Nero Wolfe. He was fantastically successful and profitable in his own lifetime because he produced a product that everybody wanted and they kept consuming. But that is the exception rather than the rule. However, everyone should still write who wants to.
And maybe that would be, this would be something that I would say on Writers Drinking Coffee, that because of the pandemic, people are starting to find their voices and they're starting to write about their experiences and they're finding a sense of community within the writing world that they would have not normally found in the past. And when I'm seeing that happen, you know, us old time writers that have been writing forever in a week, we're looking at it going, you know, I see what you're saying. I see how you're saying it. And I was where you're at, you know, maybe about 20 years ago. Yeah. And it's very encouraging, at least for me.
Exactly. Cassie Alexander brought that very much home for me. She had been involved in the writing community. She'd written fantasy romance for the most part. But she also, real life, is an ICU nurse. And she was an ICU nurse who volunteered for COVID. And she had a breakdown after 2020, in, you know, mid-2021. And her therapist said, you need to get this out of you somehow. So she took her writing and turned it into catharsis. So she gathered up all of her tweets that she had done and her social media and put it together and put the story around it. And that's where 2020 Year of the Nurse came from. And it's a book that you could buy for anybody out there that's, if you still have any friends out there that say the cure is worse than the disease, you should send them that book because people should hear about, from an ICU nurse, what exactly happens when you get that disease. So, but it was, and she says now she's writing again and she just needed to stop and deal with that complex amalgamation of emotions inside of her.
I heard that episode and, you know, that's a great episode to jump into Writers Drinking Coffee. As a matter of fact, you know, start at episode one and binge the whole thing. You've got nothing going on in your life right now. Just binge every episode that you can find.
Well, thank you. I feel we got better as we went on. We learned things. There were many things we learned. I made the opening a little bit simpler, partly because as I listened to a few podcasts, it was like, how long does this intro have to be? Really, I want get to the monkey.
3 seconds. Okay, we're good.
Get to the monkey, you know.
I got to write something for 3 seconds. Done. There you go. Get it out the door.
Exactly. There's a musical group called Tripod that's wrote a song called King Kong after going to see the movie. And it's a song about how it takes forever to get, we all came here to see a giant monkey. Don't make us wait 2/3 of a movie to see a giant monkey. So
get to the monkey.
They mean every single joke and there's dirty jokes about it too. And, you know, they call him Tripod, but it is a musical comedy group out of Melbourne, Australia, and they are brilliant.
They're on YouTube.
They're on YouTube. You can gather. And they're not paying
me. They need to pay you something.
But this would not be the first time they've been mentioned.
No, but I may have pimped out Tripod versus the Dragon before because it is freaking hilarious. They wrote a musical based on D&D.
Maybe we can talk to them into giving you some residuals or something for your hard work and your review of them. Before we were talking earlier in the interview here, we were talking about how this is going on for 10 years, you know, a bunch of people sitting around and and discussing writing. What was the impetus to go and move it into podcasting? You know, it's not that big of a jump for us because we're sitting here talking about podcasting, but what really got you guys thinking this is going to make a great podcast?
It was a combination of factors, to be perfectly honest. One was too many times sitting there saying, we should record this. This is hilarious. You guys are brilliantly funny and snarky. And we loved Kenny. Kenny runs the Bean Scene. So, you know, all hail the bean scene. But it was also that Chaz had reached a little bit of a writer's block. He'd been complaining one too many times that I haven't really written anything since I moved to America. And John is like, I really want to write a novel, but I just can't get started. And I had written a couple novels and was having a block finding an agent. And so it came the, you know, we should do something sideways but creative that has to do with writing and see if we can spark something. And I'm very delighted to say, I don't know if Chaz is going to listen to this or not, Chaz is writing. Chaz has gotten new book deals. Chaz has finished a couple novels since starting this. So by opening the plug in the dam, his creativity has really been able to flow. John's been working on his book. So it's really starting to work. So it gives us something to do. Plus, it gives us a chance, frankly, to pimp out all of our friends, old and new. You know, discover interesting things. We do not interview everybody that asks. So there's a little bit of a process of going through and reading it and saying, is this at least somewhere out there that I, you know, that I feel good about pimping this out? And then.
And in some cases, an author will resonate with one of the hosts and not others.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we have different hosts, it's because this is someone who resonated with Jeannie. This is somebody who resonated with John. You know, so.
Right.
We get a wider representation that way.
Exactly.
So switching over from focusing on the hosts, let's switch it up a bit and focus in on your audience members. Now, myself being a writer, I find a lot of value in your podcast, but who do you imagine is sitting there listening to this podcast? Obviously, I am because, well, you're on the show here with me, but who do you think is listening?
book lovers in general. It's interesting. D is my web spider and the web queen has said, do you know we're in the 10 most popular webcasts in the Ukraine? And we're in the top 40 in Australia. It's like, so part of it may be people around the world who knew us in advance and are willing to listen to us and like, hey, our friends are funny. But at the second time, I hope that it is up there. We try to provide tools for people who say, well, I could write that. I think there's a moment of crystallization that anybody has ever read a book. And have you ever read a book and said, oh God, this is terrible. And yet this is published by a major mainstream and now it's a motion picture. I could do better than this. We want to be there for that human being to say, yes, you totally can and you should. And here's lessons and here's advice. There's a book called The Mystery Writer's Handbook. And I mentioned it a few times in some of the early episodes. And I think anybody that's a would-be writer of any genre should read it because every single chapter starts with a question and they go through 20 different writers who give you 20 distinct and different answers. And that is the truth that we are trying to point out, that there is no one way. There is no one path. There is no, sure, you might be perfect at 6 a.m. every morning, but somebody else is going to be dictating as they drive down the road. And somebody else is going to be writing obsessively in their journal, but only on their lunch hour. And all of these methods in the end will produce books for you, will produce stories, will produce whatever creativity. And then the second piece was I went and started pushing and saying there are many paths to writing. And some people say that, oh, technical writing and business writing, that kills it. And yet other people are like, if you're in the habit of writing every day, the habit is what matters. And then figuring out where you are in all these things. So hopefully we're giving people tools to try them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, myself being a writer, this is definitely right up my alley to help improve my craft and what I am doing. But this is something that I think is accessible to everyone. Like you said, it's for anyone that loves books. And my wife definitely loves books. And she's not a huge podcast listener,
yeah.
But I've told her about this. And she's very interested in the life of writers. She lives with a writer, but she's interested. She knows my life, but she's interested in other writers. And this is right up her alley.
Well, I mean, I got to be honest. We cheat and take requests. Let me tell you a story. We play hockey. D&I. John has been known to score hockey. Chaz has been known to show up with pom-poms and cheer hockey, but, you know, basically hockey lovers. We were all in a women's hockey game getting ready for something, talking about the subject came up of books that really touched us and changed our life. And two of them that came up as we all said, oh, my God, Elizabeth Moon, The Deeds of Paxinarian. And half the room was like, oh, God, yes. And the other ones picked up their phones. What was that? Who? And one of them in particular, like, what do you like about it? What do you need about it? Like, well, it's the soldier's story of slogging through the mud. It's not the romantic boy with the, you know, it's not the chosen one. It really is the how to get where you want to go and pulling yourself up and working and putting in the hard work. And we all loved that. And the other one said, Carol Berg, and she sent me a book. So I read the book and I'm like, Carol, you don't know me, but you kind of know me, and you are big with the women's hockey fan set. Would you try coming be on my podcast? And it's easier, I think, for an author to say, we freaking love you, and I worship everything you've written. Would you like to come talk about it? And often they say yes. At worst, I've had the not right now, and I have a couple of the – I have some hearing challenges, so – not going to say who they are, but eventually we will be a little bit scripted on a couple of the episodes just to make it easy for writers that can't hear quite as well too. So, I mean, we got David Drake before he just retired and I shed a little tear, but yeah. I was so glad to have talked to him while he was still active. Because Parkinson's is a horrible thing. And
you think twin girls makes it hard to write.
You think twin girls are, let me tell you about Parkinson's.
That is a terrible thing. Especially for using, you know, the pen or the keyboard. They have Dragon Speak out there and I have used it in the past. However, it really just didn't work for me. It wasn't the same thing.
It's not.
It's actually interesting. My middle sister is Margaret McGaffey Fist. She has been an author for 30 years now, you know, dozens of books out there. And she, because of her job, got incredibly bad carpal tunnel 30 plus years ago, to the point where typing was physically painful. And she started with Dragon and went to Dragon 2 and Dragon 3 and Dragon 4. And she has trained it over years. And it became her second hand. It was absolutely, you know, perfect on picking up her words. But I think that was part of it, is that because she was there from the beginning and training it, she had, you know, literal years of
adjustment.
Yeah, adjustments and file recognition. Somebody coming into Dragon for the first time going, yes, I'm going to use a voice rec software. Oh, it's terrible. It's like, yes, yes it is.
I can't get Siri to phone home, and yet we've had a fellow Raymond Miller on our podcast, and I swear to God, the man pulls up his phone and he says, hey Siri, who's that wide receiver? I guess maybe he's a running back, but he was at Louisiana for a while. Was it the Tulane, or maybe he went over, but I know he ended up in Chicago. Who is that? And Siri in the end will say the name and it will just be right. And I will say, Siri, call Joe. And Siri like, I don't know who you mean. So
some people have a native gift.
Some people have native gift. Others not.
I
have
think
way.
It's that bass in the voice. You know, Siri is probably scared of the guy. Really,
he does sound a little scary, but
pussy is not scary.
Pussycat.
We love our Raymond.
Now, I promised that I would have some intriguing questions for you, some really good stumpers. So, what is your guilty pleasure podcast?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, The Hidden Almanac was my favorite, but it ended recently. And I loved that for coming out Monday, Wednesday, Friday. They were 5 minutes long. And I found them after they'd been out for a year. So I literally got to binge 50 episodes as fast as I possibly could. And freaking brilliant. It was so funny. I also love Welcome to Night Vale.
Welcome to Night Vale.
Yeah. To that end, I also like, I'm sorry. When you say, I should have asked a specific question, what genre of podcast do you mean?
Guilty pleasure.
Guilty
pleasure. He specified that.
He did specify guilty pleasure. So for me, it's the ones that tell funny serial stories. I enjoyed Sage and Savant. Actually,
yes.
I ran into Sage and Savant before I knew that they were a podcast, hilariously enough.
At a convention?
No. I wrote a short story and it was accepted into the Mad Scientist's Guild. You know, it was my Arkham K-12 science fair. And they said, oh, and hey, the guys from Sage and Savant are going to be turning these into podcasts. And I'm like, what, that people do that? So me, ignorant savage, okay then. Oh, that's neat. Look how they did that. And so Chip, who is amazing, did most of the work. And he added his own music that he'd composed and his own Foley work. And I have nothing but like enormous, huge kudos to everybody who is able to do those kind of performative things. You know, getting their music together, doing their voice actors, recording. I mean, it's hard enough if you're just going to sit there and read a story that you wrote. Because sooner or later I trip over my own words. So there's already editing. And then if you add sound effects and eerie music and...
It's I think so the cool. True answer here is that neither of us feel guilty about doing anything. So we don't have a guilty pleasure.
Leviathan. Oh, Wolf 359 was interesting for a while. But oddly, if I want to say in self-help, Ursula Vernon's husband ran Productivity Alchemy. And that was very much based on organization and getting things done.
Kevin Sawney.
Sorry, Kevin. Forgot you briefly. He is my brain.
Ursula Vernon's husband.
Ursula Vernon's husband.
Just the name, too.
Fine. The chicken man. The chicken man. Productivity Alchemy, because that was really neat. And that he tried, you know, daytime is nighttime. How do you organize it? How do you, you know, I'd forgotten about GTD until he brought it up. I'd forgotten about Pomodoro until he brought it up. But having many friends that have different levels of ADD or ADHD in their life, how do you work past that is fascinating. I had a lot of psych in college, so I really appreciate, is there useful advice I can glean out of this that I can pass on to somebody else? Either than that, or I would run a Lucy Van Pelt psychiatric advice 25 cents.
That's your next podcast. We'll get the Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee all set up for you.
We can make money at this.
25 cents. That's part of the name.
I'm just saying. I'm sorry. You have to get in at the 25 cent level if you want to be on the podcast.
We're only going to take 10%, right?
Absolutely.
I'm planning on taking 5 cents. I don't know about you.
I'll just take a penny because I know it is going to be super, super popular.
Oh, yeah.
Here's your next oddball question. If you throw yourself at the ground and miss, what are you doing?
You're flying, of course. That's how you fly. Everybody knows. I've considered hiring myself out as a great distraction for people right before they hit the ground. I'll ask them some kind of weird question or joke.
I never understand the people who are trying to learn how to fly who start at the top of a building. You could just jump off a chair.
Yeah.
You don't actually have to jump 30 stories.
Yeah. So anybody who's, if your voices are telling you have to like get a running leap at it. No. Just work on the ground. Do it in your local park. Like everybody else.
See, my brother convinced me that, if you were to jump off the fridge, then, you could fly. Mm-hmm. And I broke my nose a number of times doing that.
There's that image that has been going around the web since before Facebook, at least, of a guy halfway between the roof and a pool with a noodle around his waist and a drink in his hand. And it's titled some version of This Is Why Women Live Longer Than Men. Your refrigerator story goes right in there.
Oh, I don't know. I remember when we pulled out the inside of a dryer once and said, hey, we could put a few pillows in there and then go to the top of a hill and roll ourselves down the hill of this city street in Los Angeles. And that seemed like a really good idea at the time, too.
Did you have a way of keeping the door shut?
It didn't have a door. It was actually just we pulled the inside barrel out.
Right. I'm glad you're still alive.
There are many people that are shocked I survived my childhood. But yes is more fun than no, right?
Yes is much more fun
than no. I can't tell you how many times my wife has said, why are you not dead yet? And I'm like, well, are you happy that I'm not dead yet? I'm just saying, you know, the insurance money and all that.
You fascinate some obscure spirits who have been studying you for quite some time.
Oh, he's dead again. Revive him. We need more death.
Okay, a little bit more time.
Yeah. Well, he's got those twin girls, so we got to keep him alive until they turn 18, and then we can let him go.
Yeah, it's not your guardian fairy. It's the fairy godmother for your girls that's looking out for you. So you know.
I'm just saying, are you prepared for the day that your girls decide to throw themselves off the top of the fridge?
Yeah.
See, you know, I told them that story, and they got mad at my brother, and they called him up, and they said, you can't do that to our papa. That's
fair. So they're not quite the right age to do that yet, but they'll get there.
I sometimes wonder if all of the stories of our generation are why this next generation seems so tame.
We're going to have to agree to disagree that this next generation is tame.
Yeah, this generation, this next generation has a wild streak in them, but I don't think they are as dangerous as we are.
And then when I woke up, I was in another state, and I was like, shit, I have like 5 hours to get home or I am in so much trouble.
The reason why I asked you that question about, you know, flying and throwing yourself at the ground and missing is because, you know, I did a show for, you know, previous to the ones that I'm doing now, and for a year and a half, nobody could answer that question. It's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It's basic, you know? That's like a job that we all, you know, decide we didn't want to do anymore. But
I feel like that the question is easier to answer the closer you are to your inner child. Mm. There are a lot of people who have really completely cut off access to their inner child. None of them are here.
It shocks me more when I hit people that I realize that some people don't have memories.
That's true.
Like really vivid memories and therefore really vivid stories. And I think we were at it was a business convention for security, and we were all sitting around the table, and some of us were just telling stories because that's what you do. And then we're going to do this. Oh, and we're going to do that. And we got this coming up. And there was a girl who burst out, oh my God, I've never realized that I'm boring. Like, no, honey, you're not. But her entire life consisted of going to work, coming home. She and her husband would make dinner, and they would sit down on TV trays and watch TV, and then they would go to bed. I'm like, and I visited her house once, and she didn't have bookcases. And I know, right? I was like, have you ever had that uneasy, creepy feeling?
And this was before Kindles were everywhere.
Before Kindles were a thing. It was like looking around, trying to figure out, I'm not able to fully relax here, but I can't put my finger on, wait, where are they? Where are they all?
Where is your imagination storage? This won't help the listeners, but I'm going to rotate our camera so that you can see the bookcase that goes all the way up to the ceiling. Yeah. That is directly behind us.
Well, we have a library. I call it a library because we have this whole room that is just filled with books with those, you know, 5-level shelves that you can get from Target. And it's just wall-to-wall books.
Yeah, right? So the bookcase directly behind your head is just, you know,
daily
readers.
Yeah, that's just my daily readers. Nothing important there,
folks.
There
you go.
Chaz tells the story of when he was coming over from England to marry Karen that he had 115 boxes of books. And
the movers looked at him like he was insane.
But, you know, there were his books that he'd published, and then there were books of all of his friends that he'd bought because, of course, they're all of his friends.
And all his research books.
And all of his research books.
Cookbooks.
Yeah.
Probably.
I have to admit, at this point, because of the LASIK, I now rely upon Kindle, or my phone more to the point, because I need to be able to change the brightness and the size of the font because LASIK.
But, yeah, most of the books I have now are – the printed version is special for a reason.
Yeah.
Most of the books I'm just reading are on my Kindle.
I buy books mostly so I can give them to people. So, yeah.
I hear what you mean on that because I'm at that in-between stage where it's getting harder to read. And, you know, I can read stuff on my cell phone or my tablet, but it gets harder and harder to read things as I get older and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I subscribe to a magazine called Poetry Magazine, and when I'm reading that stuff, then, you know, some of the poems are more like diagrams versus regular poems, and it's really difficult to read. As a matter of fact, I've had to stop reading mm-hmm. comic books because it's getting that hard to read.
I would like a magnifying glass.
See, somebody with a history lesson taught me of why some of the sci-fi and fantasy books from the 70s are so crappy. I mean, the paper is crappy and they're tiny little letters and sometimes the ink is going brown and the paper is going yellow and they're super hard to read. And it's like, somebody's like, well, that was the paper shortage. I'm like, qua? So again, I learn things all the time by people we talk to on this.
That's the beauty of podcasting. We don't have to read anything.
It is. Well, it's also the beauty of reaching out and finding ways to connect with your fellow man, because whether they realize it or not, everybody has some stories. And sometimes maybe you should write memoirs, or you should write memoirs about your family, or did your granddad tell you about that time that he was a moonshine runner? Or
I will say that is one of my favorite things in life, but on this podcast, is seeing people who I think of as being famous people getting so excited to meet somebody that they think of as famous people.
Yeah.
You know, going to Christmas with my folks and saying, oh yeah, we interviewed Catherine Kerr. They're like, wait, you did what? And I'm like, yeah, she actually lives locally. She what? You know, it was one of those fabulous moments.
Well, I think that's the point of fanboying somebody. Like, I first went to a convention, and that was where I met David Drake. And I was just walking and passing. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to make a fool of myself. I'm not going to, you know, jump up and down and squee. But he was standing there, and I stopped. I'm like, I just need to say thank you. Hover tanks. And he's like, yes. And I'm like, you solved the problem of dirt. He's like, oh, my God, you get it. And we held each other's arms, and we literally both of us jumped up and down. And everybody else was looking at us. I'm like, dirt. Dirt is actually the enemy of many army equipment. Through, you know, you see people splashing through rivers, et cetera. Nobody likes that because dirt gets in everything. And dirt is the problem with tanks. So if you have hover tanks, then you don't need to worry about, you know, Rommel and the Desert Fox had all that sand problems or dirt problems or how it wears on the treads or how it breaks down. And he's fixed the dirt problem in one beautiful, elegant solution. And he was so thrilled that there was another human being out there that said, you fixed dirt. So, you know, yeah. I've always had that treasured memory of, and sometimes it's somebody who, really, you like that? Aw, yay.
That's really nice. That is really nice. So, I have a question here, and this comes from my old podcast that I used to ask people. If I had a magic wand and I waved it and money wasn't an option and time and resources weren't an option, where do you see this podcast being in, oh, let's say 5 years?
Well, I kind of like where we're going. That's very hard to say. I mean, this was when we say it's a labor of love, it really is a labor of love. So I guess it would be nice. Again, I appreciated you reaching out to us very much because it'd be nice if more people knew about it, but we don't really spend money advertising and we don't really spend money marketing. And so if the magic fairy walked down and said, oh yeah, we're totally going to market this, you're going to be on everybody's lips and everybody would know about it. I mean, that would be really cool, but we somehow made it up into, I'm episode 130 something. And that's almost overwhelming that it's kept going and it still keeps being popular and people still want to be on it and want to talk to us. And there's so much, sort of like when you're ignorant and new, you don't realize how much there is to learn, but then you have that, you know, you're good and you're like, oh, I know everything. But then you get to the edge of like, wow, there's still so much I have to learn. It's the trough of disappointment, the ridge of stunning accomplishment. And I think what I would be doing is kind of the same thing, but more people would know us, you know, that they would actively, I would love it if more of the people reached out and said, hey, I am doing a book release. Can I be on your podcast? That would be awesome. We have a little bit of that now because we're kind of getting known with some of the publishing companies that help people do self-publishing. Between that and Podcast Match, We get a lot of those of, you know, saying, and that's where we get some of the people that I've never heard of, and they've written their first book or their third book, or they're new, and they say, hey, you've interviewed all of my favorite authors, and would you like to interview me? And the answer is usually, yeah, we really would. Because I think, it, again, not everybody has a story to tell. If somebody has gotten as far as writing songs or writing poetry and publishing it, the whole effort involved, I think, deserves a parade and confetti. And I feel like we can kind of provide that for people to say, you've finished a novel, you stunning little thing, you fantastic. That's amazing.
It's actually one of those things that's interesting in the modern world, Wikipedia, which I love. I help edit. Mm-hmm. It is one of those things that you can be incredibly famous until someone not related to you has written about you. You are not considered significant as far as Wiki goes.
Right.
So things like, I have written a book and here's my release and here's a podcast not run by me that has talked about my book can literally legitimize people.
Right.
Now, it's not always going to be our podcast, but if it is, that's kind of incredible. That's, you know.
That we can help somebody further their career and further their joy in life. I mean, nobody ever goes into writing because they hate it.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, writing.
At worst, it's therapy. And maybe it could be that there are certain people that I have killed off, you know, because I didn't like them and I killed them in a book. And that's what you do, but or a story. But my husband reads my writing sometimes and he's like, I see you've managed to kill another child.
Her husband is a wonderful, sweet man. She is not.
He's a paladin. How can you marry a paladin? Oh my God. It's amazing. But I'm just a bard wandering from town to town looking for somebody.
You're a murder hobo and you know it.
That's the truth. Yeah. Well, it's rather like I got involved with Double Critical and I've been the lead writer of coming out with a 5e. It's a 2-book set of adventures in Oz.
Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition.
Sorry. 5e means Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition, but we're not allowed to say truncheons and flagons because that would violate copyright. So there's no truncheons and flagons. It's just 5e. Anyway. And that was a labor of love too, but it came about through originally when I very first got my very first story published on an online zine, it was because David Speakman happened to be, he knew me. He was looking for a story. I fit beautifully in exactly how many words he needed to have. And he published it and he published a couple more. And that led me to the next KPI. I'm sorry, key performance indicator for those that are not business geeks, which is writing a story in a rom-com with the worst cover ever. And that was supposed to be royalties. And I think they sold 20 whole copies and that didn't go anywhere, but
cover art is important.
Then it was semi-pro work, and then I started getting paid at professional rates, which allowed me to join CIFWA. So I can talk about these things of saying, okay, what do you want out of, do you want this to be a career versus do you want to just say, I'm a novelist? And again, Catherine Carr had a long discussion with us once in our writing group saying, do you want to be a writer or do you want to be a novelist? Because a novelist, they wrote a novel, they published it, there it is, and they give it to everybody and they sit around and hey, they've done it. And if that's your goal, that's really cool. Absolutely. But if you want to be a writer, you've just got more stories that you constantly want to tell. And that's what I hope and that's what I love about it 5 years from now is I hope people, I would love somebody to say, hey, I listened to your podcast. And now I have a contract and I sold my first books to a major publisher and I would cry. I really would.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I think that's the impact of your show. I mean, for me, I've been through quite a few really horrible writers' workshops. And when I listen to Writers Drinking Coffee and I hear all of you having a great time with each other and uplifting each other and just, you know, being there for each other and learning and growing, it makes, I'm going to fanboy out at this point, obviously. But what you're doing with the show,
Really? You like us? You really like us?
Well, of course I like you guys. But what you're doing with this show is really a service to all of us writers out there. And because of the feeling that you have set up, because of how you've set up the show, it inspires me as a writer to keep on with my writing. And when I sit down and listen to you guys, I, you know, talk to you guys throughout the show.
Please record yourself doing it and send it in. We need.
Can do.
That's a mental image that I'm not sure I can live without.
Trust me, you don't want to see the visuals on that. It's not a pretty picture.
No, I want to hear your feedback on episode 69 in particular.
Now, what's the deal with 69? I wasn't sure if I should bring that up to you guys.
They had plans, real plans, and they all fell through, so it just never happened.
And I decided that 69 is like the sort of a magic number you don't just waste on anything, right?
It's like, you know, 42 and 69, they go together hand in hand.
42 is an important number. 69 is an important. I used to go to drag queen bingo, and let me tell you, when it was 069, you got the floor show. I mean, I'm just saying, it was magnificent.
For about 3 months after that, it was, we're still going to record it, and we'll just insert it in there. Yeah. And then it moved on.
No, no, and not completely. There's an episode 69 that's still a twinkle in our eye.
Yes.
That'll be definitely the not safe for work episode, because
for our fifth anniversary, we will issue episode 69.
Exactly.
Well, in 5 years, I'm going to bring it back up and I'm going to hold you to it.
You brought up that we did talk about how to write a sex scene and how to block a sex scene, because that's part of writing. And I think, you know, even, you know, it's like, is there too much? Is there not enough? Is the enormity of the bosom fully justified by the plot? You know, these are, you know.
That actually came up again recently when we were just talking to Kael Gallagher, because she was right. She wrote a gay hockey romance.
Yeah.
And we had both run into things where the hockey was done badly, which is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And things where the, you know, the sex and the romance were done terribly, which is terrible.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, it's an important part that can break a book. And so many people have this, oh, but I can't talk about that. Yes. Talk about it.
Exactly. I think, and sometimes it's a tough topic to talk about, but it's been done so badly for so long. Most, you know, guys, you know, got brought up on, you know, the Penthouse letters. So when it's done correctly, it's great. I'm a big fan of French erotica, where they bring you to the point and then they go on to the next scene.
Ooh, so you need, I hate to say it, but you need girl erotica. You need girl erotica. This was years ago. I mean, ASSTR.org was a thing, and where I had brothers that, of course, were all getting Penthouse and Playboy's magazines. That was their, you know, the standard adolescent boy sexual education, as it were. And for girls, it was like I'd reading their books. I'm like, nothing. And I remember I was traveling somewhere and I found randomly in a bookstore, it was a black lace series and it was written by women for women. And the way they approached everything was utterly different. It blew my mind, is the idea that this, instead of being Penthouse letters, I never thought I would be writing this, but to take it to something that, where the plot mattered, where,
you know why they're
you
there.
You know why they're there, and what
it's
happens,
not to deliver a pizza. Picture.
And the whole point of it is not the guy coming. I don't know that I know we were going to talk about this here, but you know, the point of the whole sex scene
is not the climax.
It's not the climax.
The build up.
It's the buildup, and it's the how you feel afterwards and what happens after. And that's what it was like. And that's girl erotica. And even if you say, and they drew close and she pulled her and their lips gently. And the next morning as they were sitting there over coffee, I mean,
and as you were the perfect example of, girl erotica and boy erotica are badly named, because there are girls who love boy erotica and boys who love girl erotica. But there is a decidedly different style.
Yeah.
So you should check the marketing for Focus on Girls.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say I got introduced to, I guess it would be considered girl erotica with Marguerite DeRoss. That was way back in the mid to late 90s. I think she had passed away at that time. But I really enjoyed that stuff. Anais Nin, really loved her work. Yeah. And could I use more in my life? Absolutely, I could use more.
There was a line in The Fisher King. Do you remember The Fisher King movie when she says, "I just write stupid romances," and Robin Williams' character lights into one of the most beautiful little soliloquies ever. I'm like, no, romance isn't stupid. Romance is important. Romance is beautiful. Romance is what we drink coffee for. I mean, I'm going to start misquoting him, but it is. It's the what drives all of us to do something, because even you get old Wuthering Heights and the Brontes, no matter how dramatic or tortured, there is a certain inner human relationship that matters very much. And how you deal with that and the misunderstandings. And sure, now they do formula, but if it's part of it, it's like, okay, we have an attraction. Something's going to get thrown in the way. And even knowing the formula, it takes something special to say, but this has made it. Yeah. I really want them to get together. I can see, they're getting in their own way again. Oh, I have now analyzed the mental challenges of the author by watching what their characters do. Maybe a little bit too much, but still.
Yeah, for me, the ultimate on any book, and it doesn't actually matter whether it's a romance or a hard sci-fi or whatever, but when I finish the book and the thing that I want desperately to do is to open the next page and find out what happened to them, yeah. Even though I know this was their climax, this was their, everything is perfect. No, I want to know what happens when they wake up on Tuesday. That if you build the kind of character that people care about, and it's especially true in romance because the entire point is caring about them. But it's true no matter what you're writing.
I mean, the most romantic cartoon I ever saw was there was a pissed off looking old woman and a pissed off looking old man on a bench together. And he is grumpy and he's staring this way, but he's still holding the umbrella over her head.
Yes.
How is that not just the most poignantly beautiful thing ever? And that's what romance is, isn't it? The very essence of romance is you're part of me now.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything that I haven't asked you yet that you were really hoping that I would go ahead and ask you about?
I want to. I was going to say, you talked a little bit about tools, and I see you use Zencastr. We've used Zoom because it's easier and a lot of people just have Zoom. Editing software, how to edit things. That is, I think, some of the biggest barriers for people that wanted to go out and, so you say you want to start a podcast. So I wanted to just speak in praise for a little minute of Audacity for free stuff. And if you happen to work for an organization that happens to do any kind of videos at all, talk them into getting you a Camtasia episode, because of all of the different, you get online and you look for how-to instructions or how-to videos, they get to the monkey so much quicker than everybody else.
I will say in your short review of us, you commented that about episode 30, the sound quality improved.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess it was about episode 30 that the beautiful blue mic came into our lives.
The world's prettiest microphone. And maybe it could have been that I bought one and had Amazon deliver it to Chaz and Karen too at their place. And John already had one. So a little bit of investment in the right tools is always worth it to say,
Because yes, well, every computer has a microphone. There's a difference.
Not all microphones are created equal. I was going to say, and then the thing that I mentioned, when we were chatting before we started recording, it is tricky, and many people are not used to the idea of talking into a pod or talking into a microphone at all. So how to work with and coach your guests on speaking clearly, not dropping their chin, not covering their face. For many people, they get embarrassed or they start laughing and they titter laughing and then they cover their mouth. I'm like, please don't do that. I had one where you can't see it. I was constantly reaching out. Even we were just sitting around the table and pulling her hand away from her face. Please stop covering your mouth. Finally, I had to pause. I'm like, okay, when you dip your chin and cover your mouth like that, it sounds like this, which is really, really hard to edit for. So especially if you're going to do any kind of podcast that involves interviewing people or talking to people, having a few minutes in front to say, by the way, this is how you talk into a microphone, is time well spent.
Yeah, you know, I've done podcasting for a number of years. I've attended numerous conferences, and you know, I've been mentored by a bunch of different people. Now, I'm not an audio engineer, and your podcast is not really aimed at audio engineers. So if there's a, you know, a part that is not perfect, or there might be a little bit of a hiss in the background that, you know, somebody can hear, but I can't hear, that doesn't detract from the show. It really feels like we're sitting down, you know, and having a cup of coffee and discussing writing, you know, something that everyone here behind the microphone really loves anyways and is really passionate about. And your show fills that need.
Well, exactly. And we do the best we can. The most challenging two were because they were long distance. Aliette de Baudard came out recently and she was in Paris. And we had this weird clicking noise all the way through, and everywhere I could erase it, I did. But I did not have the sophisticated software. I really wanted to be able to say, I just want to erase this part of this line because it was in the middle of her words, in the middle of, and
there was a shark chewing on the cable.
There was a shark chewing on our transatlantic cable the whole time, and it made it hard. And ditto when we interviewed Kate Elliott out in Hawaii, that there was only so much work we could do. But in the end, sometimes you just have to shrug and say, we got it as good as we can. And hey, that's Kate Elliott's voice. How cool is that?
Yeah. And the level of technology, audio quality, if it is so bad that it makes it hard to listen to,
yeah,
that's when it's a problem. If you get it to a base level that is fine, you're good. But I have turned on it. I've turned off a couple of podcasts because it's like, I can't hear them.
I love Wolf359. I love you guys, but I had to stop listening because their Foley and their explosions were hard. And then they would be whispering at the same time. And I swear to God, I couldn't hear a goddamn thing that they were saying for a whole swaths of conversation was lost on me. I'm like, and I can't ask them for a transcript of it or what's no. So it was just became too frustrating because they let their sound engineer run things. And sometimes you need to let the writer run it.
You need a director.
You need a director with vision. And don't make your sound so loud that old people say, turn that down.
Well, if you want all these special effects, you know, just get a camera, do a movie. That's what that's all about. You don't need all these special things to be going on in your podcast.
Yeah, you've been listening to the Carol Wolf episode then. She was pointing out that her iPhone held sideways had all of the ability of a 1950s camera. And they made movies then, so why not make it now? Plus editing software.
They make a lot of movies that we still watch today.
Yes, we do.
I mean, they also made terrible movies in the 50s.
Also, they're terrible. Yes, they are not all good. I blame my parents, but I used to MST3K a lot, so.
Yeah, on Saturday nights, we watched these really bad B monster movies, and they are just horrible. One of them is The Devil's Reign, and I do not wish that upon you. The storyline is horrible. It goes nowhere. I think the mob actually was the ones that funded the making of that movie. It is just horrible.
It does not wrap all the way back around to good, huh?
Yeah. See, we used to, for a while there, we were having a Thursday night bad movie nights. And I still, just so you know, everything fell down. And I had just bought a copy of Strippers versus Werewolves. And we've got a date to watch it sometime here. So,
but the whole point was to get a big room of people.
To get a big room of people. And then,
that hasn't happened.
No. But there have been some bad movies. I still can't believe they hadn't seen Phantom in the Paradise. Yeah.
Get a camera. Get a setup going there. I will watch with you guys from here in Virginia.
Fantastic. Because, you know, these are classics. You know, sometimes you don't want a good movie because a good movie, if somebody's talking through it, you're like, shh, don't make me kill you. I swear to God, if you do not put that phone down, I will end you. But
These are the kind of movies that know
Stripper
it's okay.
Versus werewolves. I'm like, I'm going to go eat my Cheetos in your face. Get to the point. Get to the point. Oh, she's going to die. Look at her. She's going to die. Yeah, there she goes. You know? And that's fun too in its own way.
I'll be curious to find out whether or not the matching underwear rule works if you're also a stripper.
I don't know.
Like, is there a line where it becomes, that's your work clothes?
I bet this guy, do you know the magic underwear rule?
I do not know the magic underwear rule.
If a woman appears in a movie wearing a matching bra and panty set, she's going to be murdered before the end of this show.
The things you learn on these podcasts,
it
I
is
tell you.
Almost 100%. A few times when people have been aware of the rule, they have, you know, turned it on its head.
Yeah.
But it's almost 100%.
Julie set me up to watch a movie once, and it was about, there was early on, and it was a serial, I guess it wasn't a movie, it was a serial. And a girl walks into her bedroom, and somebody has been in her house, and he laid out the bra and underwear. I'm like, oh, she's going to die. That's just, I mean, that was the most vivid of the rule I had ever seen. Want to wear this for me? Be special.
Because you're going to die.
I mean, it was almost as bad as the bad writing version of it where they had a, there's been so many bad versions on TV.
I was going to say, that there was the cop show that had the vagina purse.
Oh,
that
the vagina purse.
That was the worst as far as I'm concerned.
No, no.
It was some broadcast cop show.
Broadcast cop
and
show.
In the morgue. The coroner was like, oh, well, we found her ID in a small purse tucked inside her vagina.
I'm like, no.
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 No, you did not.
No, you didn't.
That happened after death. We did not.
I mean, are you a room full of gay guys and straight guys or something? Because there's clearly not one of you ever asked a chick. We can tell you all the places we hide our ID, and that is not
that
one
is
of
not
them.
One of them.
But it was much like the...
But that made broadcast television. Anyone can be a writer.
Anyone can be a writer. You're out there. You can be a writer. You can do better than this. Please do better than this. Please do not assume that if a girl bought a $60 bra, she would buy the matching panties. Because
the matching panties are always terrible.
No.
I'm taking notes on this for sure.
We've now horrified your audience.
That's why he edits.
That's why he edits. I can tell. He's sitting there staring at us in stunned. Dear God, what have I done? What have I unleashed?
This may be his first episode where there's an outtakes.
Boop.
The outtakes are R-rated.
Here's the G version.
Yes, here's the G version for everyone. If everyone else wants to hear the entire conversation, click here.
This is also not coincidentally why we started a podcast, because...
For the low, low price of $6.99.
Well, when I make the edits and do a bonus episode with those edits and then charge my listeners for them, I'll make sure to get you guys a cut of the profits.
There okay, fair enough. You know, good if there's chance. A black market uncut.
This is why none of us are ever running for office.
This is, no, that's not it.
This is one of the many, many reasons why none of us are ever running for office.
86. I don't care about that.
Well, but today's 87, so.
Okay. Bob, if you're out there on your NSA post listening, we hope you've gotten a little something out of this.
Yeah, well, I got him the job with the NSA, so he owes me a little something, something.
That's fair. He owes you, you know.
$6.99.
I assure you, work in the graveyard shift for many organizations, both public and private. You don't want to know what people surf and look at in the middle of the night. You don't. Nope.
Well, Jeannie and Dee, I want to thank both of you for coming on the show here and sharing your insight with our listeners here. Is there one thing, one idea that you'd like to leave us with about writers drinking coffee?
Be bold. Fortune favors fools, drunks, and feisty girls that are up for anything. And if you just decide to do it, you know, in the words of Yoda, don't try. Just say, I'm going to do this and it may suck. And my first story may be bad and my second story may also be bad. And maybe they'll start getting better about 8 or 9 and somewhere in there you can write. You really can. And everything else is just, there are so many tools and more every day. There's Grammarly, there's spell checks, there's everything. Anybody can write, and I believe anybody can podcast, even if you had nothing more than your little laptop going around talking in it. You can do it. Just decide to. That's about it.
Well, thank you so very much. Definitely appreciated you.
Oh, it's been a delight. Thanks for having us.
You got it. so that's the episode. I want to thank you again for taking a listen. And if you want to outsmart the algorithm and have me review a podcast, email me, Timothy@findapodcastabout.xyz, or go to the website, findapodcastabout.xyz, where you can listen to the other episodes and leave me voicemail. I'm here to help you find your next binge-worthy podcast. Thank you for listening to Find a Podcast About, which is a production of Gagglepod East Studios. At Gagglepod, we've been helping creatives tell their story through podcasting since 2017. Look us up at gagglepod.com and see all of the network shows and reach out to us so we can help you with telling your story to the world.